Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's visit with 100-year-old Bob Clark of Clovis, California, still playing his baritone horn whenever he has the chance, whether it's with the all-stars of the Sounds of Freedom Band or simply using those musical talents to bless his fellow residents of Carmel Village in Clovis. If you're from Central California, he may have been your teacher once upon a time at Edison High School in Fresno, or your counselor at Reedley College, where he himself had been a student before World War II. We heard how the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor interrupted Bob's studies at Fresno State, how he enlisted in the Navy, and after 6 months in intelligence, was sent to boot camp. When we left off, he had gotten aboard the battleship USS New Mexico, where his lifelong love of music actually rerouted his military destiny.
I was assigned to the band's director. Just because he requested it. And on an inspection, here we are. I'm wearing my seaman stuff. And the captain stopped right in front of me. He says, "What's this?" The bandmaster said, "Just transferred aboard, sir. Can he play?" "Yes, sir." "Give him his right." That's how I made a third-class musician's right.
So if I'm understanding this right, you had not been actually assigned to the New Mexico. You were just going to be transported on it.
Yes.
But you talked your way into the band.
Yes.
So then you were assigned to the ship.
Yes.
That's a pretty unique story.
Yeah, that's the way it worked. And eventually I made second class.
Uh-huh.
But you have to be in a particular grade before you can go to the next higher. You have to.
Right.
So I made it for the third to, I think it was 6 weeks or something like that. I had to be in, I don't remember the times, but that's the idea. And then I had to be in for 9 to be in second class to make first class. And I wasn't on that ship long enough. We took on a kamikaze Japanese plane.
Yeah. Where were you and how did you experience it?
Oh, well, we were at battle stations. And the musicians aboard that ship were assigned to dressing station at first aid. And so we were immediately involved when the plane hit. I was talking to the senior medical officer on the intercom, and then I heard bang. I never heard a bang like that before.
Wow.
So I said, "Sir, I believe we've been hit." What? I said, "I believe we've been hit, sir." He said, "Just a minute." And about half a minute, he came back, "Stand by to receive casualties." So we had been hit, and I knew about it. But I don't know who else recognized the sound.
Well, I do know at least one person who did, because he's told us about it here on Hometown Heroes. Grant Erickson actually grew up not far from Bob in Central California. Let's hear his memories from the USS New Mexico, starting just before Bob Clark talked or musically played his way onto the crew.
At Bremerton, we took on a new captain, Captain Fleming. No more Zacharias. He was now gone. We stayed in contact with him, however. But Captain Fleming was a wonderful, wonderful fellow, kind of soft-spoken guy, and gave this nice talk as we left Bremerton and said that we'll soon be in the thick of battle again, which we were. And so it wasn't too long before we were out there in suicide country.
Well, and that's my question. So all this time you've been out there, mm-hmm. had you ever heard of this phenomenon of a plane that would try to crash into your ship?
Not really, no.
So when you get back out there and now the first weeks of 1945, you got your first taste of this kamikaze thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And you saw it happen to other ships before your own?
Oh, yeah. Actually, in the Philippines, we were supposed to cover for a landing on Luzon, which is on the eastern area of Philippines. We were supposed to send many, many, many projectiles, you know what I mean, but we couldn't because we were too involved in fighting the aircraft. I think it was the California was shot, it was hit by a suicide plane before our ship. Actually, every major ship on that day that we were hit was hit at least once by a suicide plane. And the problem was that our aircraft covering couldn't really take off from Tinian because it had been raining so bad. The weather was terrible. And so we had no air cover. So we just had to fight it on our own.
So you're up there on the bridge?
I'm on the bridge.
And what can you see?
Well, I see planes.
Planes everywhere.
Planes kind of everywhere, yeah. And we shot at a lot of them, too, you know what I mean? And
but they're all Japanese.
Yeah, right.
So the only defense you have is the guns on these ships.
Yeah.
So but a couple days before you get hit, an escort carrier near you, the Omani Bay, gets hit.
Yeah, right.
And you guys took on those survivors.
Took on the survivors, yeah, right.
So it's kind of building toward, this is happening to everybody else.
Yeah.
When's it going to happen to us?
Yeah.
It was a couple days later that it did.
Yeah, right.
So what happened at noon on January 6th of 45?
Well, a plane came in from up above, and it had been hit, but it was coming, so it had to land somewhere.
Yeah.
It was a Zeke, a Zero, I think called. And carrying a 500-pound bomb, and it landed on the port wing of the navigation bridge.
And that's where you were?
That's where I was. I was just inside of the bridge.
Yep.
And the captain was standing at the entrance to the bridge on that port side looking outward, and he was blown to the bulkhead inside of the bridge in kind of a seated position against the wall, the bulkhead, we call it the wall. I remember quite vividly how it was. There was a young seaman who was also blown toward him, right next to the captain. And I recall the captain putting his arm, the boy tried to get up, and the captain putting his arm on the shoulder of the boy, and he said, very weakly said, "Son, stay right where you are." And I recall that those were his last words. Medics came up right away, and they gave him a shot, but he was gone. I knew he was gone. The officer of the deck under whom I was serving, Lieutenant Sobel, was not injured that badly. He took shrapnel in his ankle and maybe a few other places, but he was injured, I've always felt, more psychologically than any other way. He went down to sick bay. He was taken down to sick bay, I guess, with some others. In addition to the captain who was killed, we lost a gunnery officer, and William Chickering, who was a Time War correspondent, was killed. An officer of the British Navy and one from the British Army who observation guys that were aboard our ship, they were killed. It was just pandemonium. It was pretty tough. And steering, there are about four or five places on the battleship from which it can be steered. So the helmsman was injured on the bridge. So steering control was taken over down in the conning tower, which was below the bridge, and the navigator of the ship took over the control of the ship temporarily until everything could be worked out on the bridge. And eventually the executive officer came up to the bridge and was now the new captain. He was a commander, but he was elevated to the rank of captain almost immediately.
Sure.
And became the new captain.
And you became the new officer of the deck.
And I became the new officer of the deck. It's kind of interesting because you have to serve your duty as a junior officer of the deck for 8 months, I think, prior to being elevated. But anyway, he elevated me right away to senior officer of the deck. And so for the next 4 or 5 days, when we were underway doing other things, bombarding and so forth and so covering landing, it was just the captain and me on the bridge. The new captain had not too much experience on his own. He was an older man, of course. It was really something. At one point, we were to get into a column movement with, I think, 8 ships in the column, and we were to be number 8 or something like that. And it was time for us to make the move to get where we were supposed to be getting. And I said to the captain, "Isn't it time that we're making the move to the helm?" Because on a battleship, you have to gauge when you make a move to turn at the position of the wake in front of you. So, that, you know, I mean, it's just kind of difficult to explain. But anyway, he just said, it's your call. And he was just testing me. Anyway, I breathed a little prayer, I guess, and made the call to the helmsman. I thought it'd make it, and turned out perfectly where we were supposed to be. It was a miracle, really. I mean, kind of fortunate that we ended up where we did.
Because if you don't get that timing right, you could collide with another ship.
It could be,
Or mess up a big domino effect.
Right.
So you're 23 years old and you're making those kind of calls. But I want to take you back to those moments, because you have some papers here from the National Archives. These are the official records of the ship of that day. And every single one of those descriptions is signed by G.A. Erickson. That's you. And you told us about what happened to the captain. He's killed by the concussion of this explosion, blown back against the bulkhead. The other sailor who's right there next to him, who he's trying to console or tell him, stay where you are. And I'm sure some people are listening and say, well, what about you? What happened to you? You're in the same room. It's the same explosion. Yeah. How are you just fine and right here? What happened there?
I had just a little trickle of blood from top of my ear. A piece of Kleenex took care of it. You know what I mean? I just wasn't injured.
But how far are you from the captain?
About 6 feet.
You're 6 feet away.
About 6 feet.
Yeah. He's killed.
Yeah.
You're okay.
Just, you know, one of those things.
How do you explain that? I mean, I don't want to make too much of it, but it almost sounds like it's a Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego or Daniel in the lion's den going on here. How in the world does it work that way?
Well, I don't know. It's just one of those things. I was blessed. I guess I had other fish to fry.
Because that explosion clearly could have knocked you off your feet, too, if it knocked the captain off his feet.
Yeah.
Just the angle of the blast or something?
Probably.
Have you ever thought about that? Thought how?
Yeah, I've thought about it a few times,
It is pretty remarkable, don't you think?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And then all of a sudden you have all this responsibility. You know, maybe this would be interesting for people and educational for them too. There was something that happened on the ship not long after that where you guys honored those who died that day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can you paint a picture of that for us? What's that like? What it looks like, and maybe more importantly, what it feels like to be a part of that?
We had a regular memorial service later, but that night, about midnight, it was a very moving experience. All the those killed were flag-draped and then buried at sea. That was really quite an experience. We had a chaplain aboard ship who participated in that. I don't know, it was just a very touching experience. I mean, it's one of those things that happened. And
that includes that captain who was 6 feet away from you. His coffin is draped with the flag and pushed out into the sea.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And as you're watching that happen, in my mind, that's where it would sink in. Why am I not in one of those coffins?
Yeah. Well, I never have thought about it.
And I get the sense that that's still, just talking about it right now, kind of takes you back to that moment. You feel those same emotions?
I do. I've always said in my total experience in life, growing up and so forth, there was a bit of scripture that always came to me. The Apostle Paul said, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. I have thought about that many times, mm-hmm. you know, in the service and at other times, even since.
Philippians 4:13. Yep.
Yeah.
And I guess the implication there is you never know what you're going to face.
No, that's true.
But if you have that as your baseline or your foundation, mm-hmm. that whatever it is, you'll get through it.
Right.
And you did get through it.
Yeah.
And there were some more. I'm looking here at a story you tell about two torpedo wakes, and somehow you're bracketed in by both of them, but they both missed you?
Yes. Well, actually, when we left the Philippines going east, we were going through Surigao Straits. The Indianapolis cruiser was behind us, immediately behind us, probably 1,000 yards, something like that. The lookouts sighted a torpedo wake on the right, and the captain, Captain Warren, was standing on the starboard side of the ship from the bridge, took note of that, and so he started giving order to the helmsman to dodge this torpedo. And I was on the left wing looking out and thought, there's a torpedo wake coming in from the left side. So I started to give an order to the helmsman. The helmsman about went crazy because he didn't know whose order he was supposed to take, you know. And so I remember Captain Warren say, "You take every order you're given," just like that. You know, I could hear him say that. After this was all over, the captain came in and he said, "You know, that was so close, I could have hit it with a spud." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, didn't you see that?" And and I said, "No, I was on the other side, dodging a torpedo coming in from the other side." And he was sort of flabbergasted. And the Indianapolis took a picture of that.
The picture shows your ship, the New Mexico,
yes,
with a torpedo wake on each side of it.
Right.
So the whole time the captain's saying, turn this way to get out of the way of this one. You're on the other side saying, no, turn this way to get out of the way of that.
Yeah, it was a sort of a zigzag kind of a thing,
And somehow miraculously?
Miraculously, yeah.
They both miss you.
Yeah.
With each story, it seems like you're beating even more odds.
In a battleship, you have a lot more steel, you know, than if you were a cruiser or, you know, or a destroyer. It would have done a lot more damage.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much to a battleship, maybe, as it would be like to a cruiser.
But it would have done enough.
It would have done enough,
and then you would see enough after that. And you mentioned the Indianapolis, of course, it famously was sunk by Japanese torpedoes after delivering the elements of the atomic bomb to Tinian. And that's where all the shark attacks came in. We've heard from survivors of that ship on this program, but we're talking to someone from the USS New Mexico, Grant Erickson. And you haven't even gotten to Okinawa yet. And that's where it got crazy.
Really crazy. Weeks and weeks of...
just nonstop kamikazes?
Almost, yeah.
How do you face that?
Gets kind of repetitious after a while.
Yeah.
You know, we had an interesting happening there in Okinawa. The Indianapolis, about 3 weeks... I guess it was before we were hit, a second time with a suicide plane. It was hit by a suicide plane, and it did a lot of damage. And about 4 days after it was hit, Admiral Spruance, who was aboard the Indianapolis, came aboard our ship with some of his flag yeomen and so forth. So they were aboard our ship. At one time, the LSGs were making smoke screen to envelop all of us in smoke because there were a lot of suicide planes, and also we heard there were suicide boats also doing damage. So they were making smoke. Our call name was Ironsides. I can remember the captain, since we weren't enveloped in smoke, wondering why we weren't, you know. He wanted to protect the Admiral and everybody else. So he sent his gunnery officer in a motor whale boat off to try to get to the ship that was doing this smoke screening. And shortly after the whale boat left the ship, the smoke just poured in. And actually, the whale boat kind of got lost.
I bet.
And it couldn't figure out how to get back. And I remember we had to ring the ship's bell several times to give the identification for where we were, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But they got back all right.
You mentioned the Indianapolis getting hit, so all these guys are evacuated onto your ship.
And yes.
Maybe it saved some of their lives with what happened to the Indianapolis, because I believe, if I remember correctly, there's about 800 of the 1,100 on board died when it sunk. But then your ship gets hit again by kamikazes on the 12th of May. And you've got a photo of this that I'll put at hometownheroesradio.com of the explosion on your ship.
Yeah.
What did that feel like?
Well, that was another big blast. I was at my battle station, which was on the navigation bridge. I could see the plane coming. It was coming toward the starboard side of the ship, straight, low over the water. It was a twin engine. It had also been hit, but it came right in and hit the 20-millimeter and 40-millimeter guns mouth in that area on topside. It just practically wiped out our Marine detachment. Every battleship has a complement of about 75 Marines who handle those duties, the 20 and 40-millimeter guns mostly. We had about that time maybe 55 killed, something like that. The plane itself landed down in the bottom of one of our stacks with the pilot minus his head. Anyway, it created actually more damage that time than the time we were hit in Kwajalein, because it did a lot of damage down below, you know.
Well, and the bomb went off, and then that sets off gasoline,
and
you describe it here like a giant blowtorch.
Right.
You just see flame, flame shooting up into the sky.
Right.
And those who were killed, you mentioned 55 killed.
Yeah, right.
all those Marines on those guns, I mean, the purpose of those guns is to shoot down airplanes.
Right.
So they're probably firing at this bomber the whole time until it hits them and kills them.
Right.
That's the ugliness of war.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Did you ever get numb to that? The loss of life, the devastation, the chaos?
I guess I just took it as another day's work, you know.
How many times have we heard that from members of our greatest generation? Again, that was Bob Clark's shipmate, Grant Erickson. You can link to his complete original interview at hometownheroesradio.com. But when we come back, we're going to get back to Bob's story. He heard that kamikaze hit, but what did he have to do afterwards? And how long does he plan to keep playing his baritone in the Sounds of Freedom band? Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.